Campaign opening, the characters find themselves aboard a large interstellar vessel traveling to many planets on their way to Nentra, a new planet that needs cultivating. The Dragon Empire has opened Nentra for colonization and exploration. The characters feel that they may be able to make a name for themselves or at the very least become wealthy in helping to bring culture to Nentra. Most of the characters come from poor worlds and are provided meager living quarters and board. As the characters board the vessel, their weapons, armor and most gear has been placed in a subhold aboard the ship. This is a safety precaution on this type of transport vessel. The vessel has thousands of passengers and therefore, to ensure everyone's safety, personal weapons are not allowed. Zoltan failed to smuggle anything on board. Milo decided to pick up a knife during a meal. Alejandra has her holdout pistol. Sid kept his data pad of spells and his headband of intellect. Orendel smuggled nothing. Zuxan bluffed his way on board with the holdout laser pistol. After many weeks of traveling, the characters find themselves in one of the ship's many saloons. Dash. 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 Adventure 1. Somewhere along the galactic rim, a new planet has just been opened for colonization. Named Nentra, entrepreneurs from across the galaxy are flocking towards it, looking to make their fortune. As the passengers board their ships, they are searched for weapons or magical items secreted about their person. Many try to hide a gun, but the guards are thorough and few manage to get aboard. Even with the advances of today's age, Nentra is a fair distance away and the trip will be long. As such, the starships that are to transverse the distance to the distant planet are almost small cities in the amenities they offer. Our story begins within a bar, as these stories so often do. Sid sat alone within the bar at a small table. He sipped slowly at his drink, as he reviewed the spells stored within his datapad. He had been surprised to find someone on this transport that had known him from his days at Eldritch Software. Apparently someone had managed to bring a magical item aboard ship, an item his old acquaintance wanted badly. He had offered Sid a substantial amount of money if it could be obtained. Zoltan stood off to one side of the bar watching the door. He had seen a magical item that had been smuggled on board the ship and hoped to rid the universe of its presence. He sipped at his drink as he reflected on the number of magic items that he had destroyed since forsaking magic. Milo sat on a bar stool watching the door as well. He had likewise heard of a magical item on board and hoped to add it to the collection he owned. He was already prepared to pay a small amount and just hoped the owner was willing to sell. Orendel sat at a table across from Sid, watching the door. He had learned of an enslaved fairy trapped on this ship. He hoped to at least protect her, if not free her. Someone who could perpetuate such crimes on the free magical creatures of nature surely must have the blackest of hearts. Zuxan walked down the hall, the magical container he had recently obtained clutched in his claw. Alejandra, trapped within, futilely yelled at him as they strode down the hall. Hopefully, he could get rid of the container and the annoying little fairy trapped within, while getting some creds at the same time. Finally, Sid saw the man he had been waiting for entering the bar. The man wore a heavy cloak that hid many of his features, but it was still obvious that he was not only of dragon descent, but of drow as well. Signaling him over, Sid motioned for the stranger to take a seat. Zuxan sneered as he sat down. He placed a small glass container on the table, then drew the cloth covering it away. Underneath was a small lamp with strange metal implements making up the top and bottom. Inside the lamp itself was a small fairy, futilely glaring out at the two of them. Negotiations were quick and brutal. "How much is the asking price?" asked Sid. 100,000 creds, shot back Zuxan. Sid spluttered out that he could not pay that price, nor was it likely anyone else in this bar could. Zuxan just stood up, as Alejandra began shouting at him. "I am worth way more than 100,000 credits," she cried. Sitting down at the bar, Zuxan propped Alejandra up on the bar and began to argue. Sid followed, not willing to give up yet, and again tried to establish a more reasonable price. Again Sid was rebuffed. Milo approached Zuxan, inquiring about the container and the possibility of buying it. Realizing he couldn't manage to pay the price Zuxan quoted, Milo walked away, but was soon called over by Zoltan. Zoltan had noticed the large half-dragon, half-drow who was even now arguing with the small fairy who was trapped within some kind of glass container. Obviously this was the magic item he hoped to destroy. When Milo finished conversing with Zuxan, Zoltan called him over, asking what he knew of Zuxan and the item he carried. Orendel soon approached the small gathering and introduced himself to the small group. They each wanted the lamp, albeit each for his own reasons. However, realizing that none of them had enough money to buy it alone, they each agreed to try and pool their money for the purchase. Milo approached Zuxan again, offering 60,000 creds this time. Zuxan simply laughed in the halfling's face. "Even if I would sell it for 60,000, I wouldn't sell to a halfling." Back at the small table, Milo, Orendel, and Zoltan quickly decided that if Zuxan would not sell lamp, then perhaps they should take it. Quickly they decided that Zuxan must have stolen the lamp in the first place, and as he got up and began to leave, they stood up and approached him. Sid had spent this entire time at the bar himself, angry at the half-dragon for denying him the chance to replenish his sorely depleted funds. Suddenly Milo approached him and explained what Zoltan, Orendel, and him were doing. Milo had seen Sid trying to negotiate with Zuxan earlier and thought he might be interested. To be honest, we think the half-dragon may even have stolen it. We don't know how he thinks he can get that much money in this bar. I just figured the half-dragon was stupid, Sid replied. Milo walked away, realizing Sid was not going to be much help, and instead began walking towards the bar's bouncer. Meanwhile, Zoltan suddenly jumped forward and knocked the lamp from Zuxan's hands. Orendel quickly realized that Zoltan didn't care for the safety of Alejandra, and it was shortly after that Orendel, Zoltan, and Zuxan began to struggle back and forth over the lamp. Instead of joining in, Milo began distracting the bouncer, not only slowing him down, but also running propaganda about how the half-dragon had stolen the lamp. Zuxan stepped back and cast grease on the lamp, causing it to begin slipping from hand to hand. Alejandra by now is screaming, as the lamp takes shock after shock. So far she isn't harmed, but it will only take one piece of glass breaking the wrong way. Suddenly Alejandra casts dispel magic on the lamp, but nothing seems to happen at first. Then suddenly the lamp releases a large dispel magic throughout the room. Sid feels the spell try to affect the shield spell he had cast in the meantime, but his spell managed to hold. The dispel magic does rid the lamp of the grease, however, and Zoltan manages to take hold. Realizing that freeing the fairy before breaking the lamp would keep Orendel from fighting with him, he tries to manipulate the knob on the top. Red lightning bolts begin to play throughout the lamp and Alejandra screams in pain. Orendel realizes he has to risk hurting Alejandra to get her out, and him and Zoltan begin working together. Zuxan takes a swipe at Zoltan with his claws, but is shortly then after dazed by Sid. As the bouncer continues to advance, Zuxan realizes he will not be able to recover the lamp. He begins to run, but before he can get far, Sid casts another spell, Hold Person this time. It fails to affect Zuxan though, and he starts to head for the door. Zoltan, sufficiently agitated by now, grabs hold of the lamp and runs to the bar, where he quickly smashes it against the corner. Alejandra goes flying across the bar, as the lamp is quickly reduced to useless matter. Zoltan feels a rush, as he realizes he has helped another person remove the taint of magic from them. And then guards are everywhere. The ship's police have watched the brawl and have already captured Zuxan. Everyone else is pulled in as well, including Alejandra for the dispel magic, as well as a drunken drow who at one point bumped into Zuxan. The small group of suspects is led down into a dark part of the ship, where they pass by several people similarly held, as they are. They see several orcs, and a few other races they recognize, along with a whole slew of ones they don't. Milo calls out that he wants his phone call, causing the drow guards to burst out into laughter. The held suspects are loaded onto a small ship, where they are locked into small cells. Alejandra and Milo share a cell, being the smallest prisoners. Everyone else is loaded into their own individual cell. The suspects, who are quickly beginning to think they are no longer suspects, who look to be the strongest or most capable of escaping, are but behind force barriers instead of bars. Suddenly the prisoners felt the ship lift off. One drow guard remained on board, striding up and down between the cramped cells, explaining the prisoner's plight. A human pilot sat the controls, as the party flew into space. You are heading for the prison planet Afex. If you act up, I jettison you. Understand? It was then that everyone realized the back of the cells were actually airlocks. Finishing his inspection of the cells, the drow guard captain takes a seat towards the front of the prisoner transport. Sensing a loosening of security, Sid bends down and begins discussing the possibilities of escape with Milo. Several of Sid's spells could prove useful for escape, if he could simply get the help of an accomplice. Alejandra continuously interjects biting comments aimed at Sid or Milo. No one else on the transport seems to have much to say. Zoltan complains bitterly, and his steel bars are replaced with an energy shield for his effort. Everyone else seems more shocked, or perhaps resigned to their fate. The trip passes uneventfully. Sid and Milo create a few plans, but all of them have several flaws. And then it comes into sight. The prison planet Afex. A noise emerges from the cockpit, full of static and barely audible. Turn back, prisoners, over a large breach, turn back. The pilot quickly starts calling out for the guard, who enters the cockpit to see what is going on. The argument is clearly heard from the cells. Maybe we should turn back, sir. That message sounded pretty serious. Nonsense. There is no way prisoners could escape. Obviously there is some problem with the communications system. Just land. Grimly, the prisoners look from one another. That kind of obstinacy definitely did not promise a happy landing. And suddenly was entering the atmosphere, pushing down towards Afex. The ship shuddered suddenly, rocking from one side to the left. Again the pilot voiced his concerns, and again was shot down by the drow guard. As the ship rocked from side to side more and more, the prisoners realized that their transport was being shot at. The pilot quickly confirmed this. They're shooting us. We have to get out of H. The pilot was cut short, as a large hole suddenly appeared in the far wall. One prisoner vanished into a fine mist, as the transport suddenly took a nosedive, heading straight for the ground. Passengers scream and everyone is thrown about, as more holes are punched through the transport. With a shuddering lurch, everyone is thrown about, as the transport smashes into the surface of planet Afex. The guard captain is blown from the cockpit, clearly unconscious. More blasts pelt the downed transport and several more prisoners are reduced to mush. The cells begin to unlock automatically and the first prisoners, out are orcs, quickly run forward and begin to kick the guard. A few more take the guard's weapons. As Orendel is released, he runs over and takes the command for the cells from the guard's belt. Checking on the pilot in the cockpit, he realizes that he is pretty obviously dead. As more blasts rock the downed ship, however, the prisoners begin to flee through the open door, in addition to the blast holes. Sid sees one orc running away from the source of the blasts, only to be vaporized, as a bolt of yellow light burned through his back. Quickly deciding that heading towards the source of the incoming fire is the best idea, he starts heading for a large building that seems to have some kind of turret. A large group of prisoners run toward the corner of the building, but Sid runs for the large double doors in the front. Orendel, Zoltan, Zuxan, Alejandra, and Milo head toward the corner with everyone else. Alone, Sid opens the large double doors. Inside is blackness. Sid casts a light spell and slowly begins to move into the dark room. Meanwhile, at the corner of the building, the prisoners suddenly hear the sound of booted feet. A small group of armed individuals wearing strange uniforms and armor comes running right from the direction everyone was heading. The small groups of prisoners scatter with Zuxan, Milo, Alejandra, and Orendel heading for the door that they can see Sid even now beginning to enter. Zoltan meanwhile attempts to stop one of the apparent guards and asks what's going on. The guard looks Zoltan up and down for a moment before ignoring him and running to the downed space shuttle. Zoltan follows, heading back into the mangled spacecraft, as he sees the guards searching about. He's not here, one guard shouts out. He must have already escaped. Zoltan cautiously approaches the guards and asks exactly who they were looking for. The guards again take notice of him, and this time decides he is worth their time to answer. Who are you and what are you doing out here? Can't you tell this place is dangerous? I saw the ship crash and I was wondering if there were any survivors. If I had known some type of firefight would be going on here, I wouldn't have come. Could one of you spare a firearm so I can defend myself? The guards look Zoltan up and down, appraising how much he is worth. Finally, they refuse to give him any weapons and just tell him to get out of the area. Obviously, he is just some crazy who lives in the vicinity. Back at the doorway, a Sid is slowly leading everyone else into the prison using his magical light. Obviously, the prison was the scene of recent violence, as several pieces of furniture are ripped up or melted to slag. As the group enters, a small hologram appears on one of the few still standing tables. The hologram is of a man, and as the group moves closer, it begins to talk. Greetings and welcome to the Afex prison colony. I'm your guide. What can I help you with today? His sole thought, on reaching the roof and disabling the turret, Sid quickly asks for directions to the elevator. Sorry, there appears to be a problem with the network. I cannot access that information at this time. Many of the questions were asked, but the only one to get a different response was a query about the location of the warden's office. The warden's office proved to lie right beyond the melted heap of slag that had been a door on the right wall of the room the group was in. By the time the hologram had revealed that information, Zoltan had run up from the ship to see what was going on. Falling naturally into something of a group, since there is safety in numbers after all, the now complete party begins advancing through the door directly in front of them. As the party entered the next room, they quickly made out the hissing crackle of static. Almost the entire northern wall was covered in monitors, each one filled with crackling static. Red lights provided a dim amount of light in the room, enough to see a man walking back and forth in front of the monitors, making adjustments as he walked. The man wore a holster over his guard uniform and seemed to be muttering to himself as he paced back and forth in front of the monitors. Clearing their throats, the party made their presence known. Jumping, the man turned towards the party and asked who they were. We're repairmen for the turret, answered Sid. I don't think we called for any kind of repairs on the turret, the guard answered back. Well, someone did. That seemed enough to satisfy the guard, who quickly introduced himself as Tucker. Apparently there had been a prison revolt, which happened to coincide with all the surveillance cameras going out at once. Sid offered to take a look at the monitors and see what was wrong, but quickly figured out that they were simply not getting any feed. All the cameras must be destroyed or disabled, Sid told Tucker. Maybe one or two, but surely not all of them. We have these cameras all around the prison. Tucker was obviously somewhat shaken by whatever had been going on, so the party decided to let him continue to believe that. As the party continued to talk with Tucker, a few of the guards entered from behind the party. For a few moments, everything was tense, but once Tucker explained that they were all repairmen for the turret, the other guards quickly relaxed. Apparently, the prisoners had revolted some time earlier. Fighting had been brutal, and several guard stations had not reported in 4 hours. There were only a few guards in the area and they only controlled a few rooms. The main offices had been attacked in force and sealed off. No one knew what was going on in there. Likewise, the prisoner levels had been sealed off. The guards, excluding Tucker, were armed with taser pistols. While there was a cache of weapons somewhere in the prison, only the warden knew where, and he had been one of the first casualties of the riots. The party agreed to go up to the roof and repair the turret anyway, despite the fact that the upper floors were likely prisoner-controlled. The guards, visibly impressed by this repair crew's bravery, offered them some guard vests and taser pistols. Sid accepted Tucker's semi-automatic pistol. The repair crew was led to the elevator in the prison by a pair of guards. The entire area was spookily lit with infrared warning lights. Power had been out in several areas for hours and the guards were pretty sure the elevator wasn't working. Surely the repair crew could fix it though. Reaching the elevator doors, the guards thanked the party again before leaving to resume their positions in the rooms they controlled. Turning to the elevator, the party tried calling it down. When nothing happened for several minutes, Zoltan pried open the elevator doors and looked up. The elevator appeared to be stuck on the second floor and seemed to have no intention of coming down for the party. There was a service ladder, but there was no way the larger members of the party could make it past. Alejandra suddenly flew into the elevator shaft. I can fit through. Hold on a moment. Flying up, Alejandra inspected the elevator and the way it was held in place. She realized all she had to do was remove two pins and the elevator would come crashing to the ground. Slowly, Alejandra wriggled the first pin free, followed shortly after by the second. The elevator gave a lurch, as Alejandra plummeted down the shaft and out the still open doors, just escaping the rapidly falling elevator herself. The elevator landed with a crash and debris flew everywhere. The elevator shaft looked like a small war zone, the floor covered with twisted wreckage. On the plus side, the service ladder was now clear of obstructions. Agreeing to stay back and explain what had happened to the guards, Zuxon walked back towards the entrance of the small elevator room. Everyone else climbed up, passing the doors for the second and third floor, instead heading up to the fourth, where the guards said they could gain access to the turret. Jimmying the elevator door open, the party scrambled out of the elevator shaft and onto the medical wing of the fourth floor. As each person left the shaft, they were greeted with a horrible squishing sound. Slowly turning around, each was horrified by what they saw. A large mass of bulbous, almost liquid flesh sat at the far corner of the room. Tentacles waved from many places along its surface, each tentacle tipped with some kind of sucking appendage. Several corpses lay about the room, obviously victims of the creature. The room itself was in shambles, operating tables overturned, surgical implements spilled about. Most horrible of all, however, was what was attached to the creature. Lying on the floor was a man in a white lab coat. It was hard to say where the creature ended and the man began, as they seemed to almost blend into one another. As disgusting as the sight was, it was worse when the man opened his eyes and looked at the group. As he glimpsed the small party, he began calling for help pitifully. Help! Help! But don't get too close. It will get you too. The party instantly shot a barrage of questions at the man and he explained, as best he could. I am a doctor here. I was experimenting on a prisoner when his trauma symbiote went haywire. It grabbed several guards and me. I'm the only one still alive. Don't worry. We can kill the thing and get you out in a hurry, called Sid, as he began running a list of the spells he had available in his mind. Wait. No. Somehow, it's reversed itself. Instead of protecting its host, it's using its host for energy. That means me. If you attack it, it will drain me to heal itself. How should we get it off then? Find a surgeon. There is a prison riot going on. We probably won't be able to find anyone who can help. I know there is a riot going on. This thing killing guards probably started the bloody thing. Discussing among themselves, the party quickly came to the conclusion that a surgeon was not going to be found here. Any surgeons left alive were likely to be prisoners, and they certainly wouldn't be trustworthy. Either way, the captured doctor didn't look like he could last much longer anyway. Instead, it was decided that Sid would quickly attack the mutated trauma symbiote. Hopefully, the safeguards programmed into trauma symbiotes were still in place on this one and it would stop draining the doctor once he fell unconscious. Milo would try to approach and cut the doctor free as soon as the symbiote was dead. Pushing up his sleeves, Sid began casting spells. He began with the haste, increasing his speed dramatically. He then shot forth several small orbs of electricity as well as a deafening blast of sound. The doctor screamed and fell silent, as Milo began to tumble forward, dodging the creature's grasping tentacles. Sid continued to blast the beast with magical power, as Alejandra and Orendel began shooting it, Alejandra with the laser pistol she had concealed, Orendel with the semi-auto that Sid had given him. The mutated symbiote just seemed to soak up the damage, holes appearing in its huge bulk apparently not injuring it very much. Milo nearly reached the doctor, but suddenly found himself attached to the monstrosity by one of its tentacles. Using his knife to scrape it off of him, he quickly moved back out of range as Sid, Orendel, and Alejandra continued to rain death onto the blob of flesh. Finally, the creature began to succumb to its wounds, and with a sickening squelch, started to dissolve into a sticky goop. Milo moved forward again, but the doctor was unfortunately beyond his help. The doctor had apparently been drained to death by the symbiote before it died. The party mourned the doctor for a moment, but at least he was no longer in pain. Moving his corpse to where the other bodies lay, the party saw that the symbiote had been blocking three doors. Before the party could go through any door, a noise from the elevator shaft caused them to turn around. An elf wearing a strange-looking orange jumped had climbed out of the elevator shaft and was staring at the destruction with wide eyes. He had come up to see what the noise was, and had found a scene from a nightmare. The party explained some of what was happening and what they were doing, and the elf offered to tag along. He had been getting bored wandering about. The party agreed to let him come along and, deciding to try the center door first, opened it and walked through. Inside was a narrow hallway, both walls lined with medical supplies. At the far end lay another door. Ransacking the medical supplies, the party quickly found several boxes of medical patches, small sticky patches that released healing chemicals when applied against skin. Several large bottles of painkillers were found as well. Both dermal patches and painkillers were pocketed by Milo. Opening the door slightly, the party peeked out and saw two figures standing next to the turret. Obviously, either they had shot down the transport as well as vaporized most of the escaping prisoners, or else someone inside the turret still had done the dirty work. Either way, the party would make them pay. Moving back in cautiously, the group asked Alejandra to scout out the area somewhat. She had already proved herself somewhat sneaky, and would likely be able to slip by unnoticed. Sniffing at the inconvenience, she turned invisible and silently flew out to get a look around. No one else was on the roof except for the two figures standing next to the turret. The figure farthest away was a male centaur wearing a bright orange shirt over his human torso. In his hand was some kind of makeshift club, a table or chair leg. The centaur's companion was a large, green, ugly monstrosity. The female troll had wicked claws as well as razor-sharpened teeth. Flying back, Alejandra explained the situation. While trolls and centaurs were both strong, they were outnumbered plus the party was armed, while they weren't. Victory was nearly assured. The party checked the ammo for all of their guns before opening the door and charging out. Guns leveled towards the two creatures, Milo shouted out. Freeze and we won't shoot. But where there should have two, there was only one. Suddenly the female troll emerged from the other side of the turret, charging forward into the group swinging her mighty claws. The centaur moved forward beating at Zoltan with his club. Several taser darts were fired, but they seemed to have no effect. Milo quickly dropped his taser and pulled out his steak knife. Orendel began firing at the troll nearly point blank with his auto pistol, while Alejandra hovered above the troll, invisible firing down. Sid cast a spell and his hand was surrounded by a sickly white glow, as he advanced towards the troll and began trying to touch her. The elf ran forward and began attacking the troll with the makeshift club he had. The troll's claws ripped into Sid, shredding his clothes and leaving bloody gouges across his chest. Orendel was struck as well, while Zoltan received a beating from the centaur's club. Sid continued to attack the troll as Alejandra's invisibility ran out. The troll proved to be very quick, and the sickly green skin proved to be very tough. Many of Orendel and Alejandra's shots were simply dodged or stopped by its tough hide. The centaur was not faring so well, as Milo quickly began to hamstring the beast with his knife. Zoltan abandoned his gun for his fists and began attacking the centaur with his bare hands. The troll ripped into Orendel and Sid again, blood beginning to spew from several of Sid's wounds. The centaur collapsed in a bloody pool, as Milo stabbed it a final time. The troll took yet another piece out of Sid and Sid fell to the ground, unconscious and mortally wounded. Milo ran forward and applied one of his patches to Sid, ducking, as the troll swung at him. Handing Sid the remaining patches, he approached the troll with his knife, and began searching for a weak spot. Zoltan approached the troll from the opposite side and continued to use his bare fists, as he attacked the troll again and again. Alejandra continued to take pot shots, but the troll was too difficult to hit. Sid crawled back to the wall, where he began applying dermal patches to himself. The rest of the party attacked the troll again and again, but it simply shrugged off most of their blows, and healed the few that landed. Things weren't looking good.